I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there. And today, those who want to reclaim their health. Next hour, we'll do Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. This is fasting week, so we're going to hear a little bit of, about that. Actually, kind of a lot. You know, I think it's every January. If you've just tuned into the show over the past couple of weeks, you hear me talk about fasting a lot. It's not a fasting show, but at the beginning of every year, I fast, and I'll be honest with you. I like to talk about the benefits of fasting because I'm in the middle of one right now. And sometimes you stop and think, now, wait, why am I doing this? Is this really helping me? And so we're going to talk a little bit about fasting. I do believe it is just such a great reset. I'm not a technologically inclined person. I am of the, if there's something wrong with anything technological, the solution is to turn it off and turn it back on again. And it seems like most of the time that works. And I think it's the kind of the same with your body and particularly your gut. So I'm turning my gut off for a few days and then I'll turn it back on. Not that I was having any real problems, but I just think it's a good reset every year to clear out the cookies, pun intended. And so we'll talk about that next hour. I actually thought yesterday that I'm really missing a huge opportunity with this, and I should rebrand my annual fast this year in light of mandates and the craziness going on in the world as a hunger strike instead. I heard Dana Loesch yesterday talking about, I guess, some Congress critters are doing a hunger strike, or some people are doing a hunger strike on the voting rights bill on the steps of the Capitol. And so I just realized I'm missing a huge opportunity. I should build this not as a fast. I should have kept that a secret and build it as a hunger strike to get the masks off of our children. I could do that. Maybe I could do it until medical marijuana becomes law. This would have been great press for both the station and for myself. I don't know if it's too late. I'm pretty public about the fact that I voluntarily do this. Maybe until Thomas Dobbs resigns. That would have been pretty, it could have been effective. We'll see. Of course, Thomas Dobbs, we already know, he's not above sacrificing a life or a few thousand to cling to that position of power. But I think I've missed an opportunity here, so maybe I'll work on rebranding that. Of course, if you live in the state of Virginia, if I was in the state of Virginia and was fasting in order to get the masks off of our children and made a big deal of it that way, I could already start eating again. Have you heard their governor, this Youngkin character? Americans for Prosperity was very involved in the Youngkin campaign up in Virginia to face off against that incredibly horrible Terry McAuliffe. Well, the Republican Youngkin won, and he's getting right to business. And let's just listen to the governor of Virginia and just dream about this being our governor.
Two, reaffirming the rights of parents, the upbringing, education, and care of their children.
What?
This executive order particularly addresses the rights of parents to, in fact, make a decision with regards to whether their children wear a mask in school.
Holy cow. Ah, the governor of Virginia believes that it is the parent's decision whether or not the child wears a mask in school, not the hysterics in the administration that are taking gobs and gobs of money from the federal government to enact these COVID policies that force your children into these bacteria trap, ineffective cloth face coverings, damaging them psychologically, socially, and physically. The governor of Virginia signs an executive order saying the parents get to decide what medical procedures, what medical theater their children will or will not go through. So anyway, Glenn Youngkin, he took his first day in office and signed a bunch of executive orders. I'm not a big executive order fan. I'll be honest with you right now. I don't like one person having that much power, because what happens next time? They'll elect a Terry McAuliffe type in Virginia, and they will go in and do their executive orders. I'm not a big fan, but the idea that they've got a governor there that believes that parents are in charge of the children is certainly a refreshing thing. Certainly wish we had that here in Mississippi. For those of you that are not there yet, have not come down from the mountain of hysteria, if you are still hysterical and demanding that everybody around you participate in the great vaccine experiment and mask themselves because they're an existential threat to you, how about this? Here's some headlines. Well, this was actually put out in a chart. Fourth shot booster in Israel. They're already on their fourth shot. And zero COVID Australia, both with the highest case numbers in the world. Huh. How does that work, you think? Israel on their fourth shot. Australia, which we've seen their incredible lockdowns, they're bossing people around, locking people in their homes, taking them to, air quotes here in the studio, wellness camps, and they both have the highest case numbers in the world. Huh. It's interesting how that works. I ran across a thread of memes. It was titled COVIDiocy. That's what it is. And there were just some great things on here. Someone named Fat Yak tweeted out, "I gave my freedom away to get my freedom back, and I'm still not free, and it's all Novak Djokovic's fault." I guess I would imagine that Fat Yak is an Australian. "I gave my freedom away to get my freedom back, and I'm still not free, and it's all Novak Djokovic's fault." I'll be honest with you. I haven't talked a lot about that tennis star, number one player in the world, I believe. I haven't talked about him a lot because I struggle to pronounce his name. I think that's what it is. Anyway, that guy, you know, he's a hero. Aaron Rodgers, a hero. Kyrie Irving, a hero. These guys who have resisted, and a lot of them have got, you know, they've got the money. It really doesn't matter. And they've got the perspective to know they don't have to keep chasing more and more dollars. So I'm an Aaron Rodgers fan, a Kyrie Irving fan, and now a Djokovic's fan. They are saying that they're going to keep him out of the next tournament in Spain, whatever tournament that is. He may be looking at an early retirement if this insanity keeps up, but he's so far sticking to his guns. Good for him. There was another meme that was on this COVIDiocy thread. "The simple fact that you were fooled and conned doesn't make you an idiot. What makes you an idiot is when you blatantly refuse to look at the truth and make the conscious decision to believe the lies." That's where we are at this point. If you got duped into wearing a mask, if you got duped into taking a shot that has turned out to be ineffective and dangerous, if you got duped into all those things, that doesn't make you an idiot. But if you refuse to see it at this point, as obvious as these things have become, that makes you an idiot. Speaking of idiocy, there's a picture of one of these tent things set up outside of a New York restaurant. And somebody narrated it this way. They said, "We can't eat inside, but we can eat outside. But it's cold, so we set up outside as inside. It's fine because it's outside inside." And that's what we did. They would not allow inside dining at these places, so they went and set up a tent. And they would stick a table inside a tent and call that outside dining, although it was quite obviously inside, outside, but it passed muster. Stephen A. Smith, I'm not a huge sports ball analyst watcher, but he is a commentator, I think, on ESPN. This was a tweet from Candace Owens. Stephen A. Smith, I saw a headline, didn't read the story, but I saw a headline that he had battled COVID. One of these it's no joke type stories. I didn't read it. Candace Owens put out a tweet. "Stephen A. Smith caught COVID, was hospitalized with severe symptoms, and almost died. He believes that this is proof that the vaccine he received worked because he only almost died. We did it, y'all. We've reached peak stupidity as a species." And that's if that is the recounting, if that's actually what happened with Stephen A. Smith, He got so sick he had to be hospitalized and almost died after taking the shot and presumably the booster. And he credits the shot that they told him would keep him out of the hospital for sure. Oh, you might catch it, you might spread it, but you definitely won't go to the hospital. Apparently he almost died with this shot pulsing through him, and he credits the shot. And then one last meme that was in the COVIDiocy thread here. It's not a booster. It's the third shot of a product that already failed twice. Amen. I'll be right back. Got a little bit of commentary here on the narratives we're seeing, and then I'm going to switch topics. I started looking at the Tonga stuff. I talked yesterday about, if you haven't seen this explosion of the underwater volcano that affected the islands of Tonga. Apparently there's many, many islands there. It's really a very, very sad story for the people who live there. But I started looking into it. There's, you know, somebody the other day said, oh, you're one of those conspiracy theorist guys. And I do believe in conspiracies. There's no doubt about that. That they occur. You know, conspiracy theory being a CIA invented term for anybody who questioned the JFK assassination. If they were trying to throw you off the scent of the JFK assassination, then kind of says they were hiding something to me. But that's just my. I'm more of a coincidence theorist, and there's just something interesting about the Tonga explosion that we'll talk about after the bottom of the hour. Has anybody else noticed the constant day-to-day, right now it's maybe it's every few days, they are flip-flopping the narratives around COVID very quickly now. And I would imagine there is something, you know, a lot of people following this playbook of Edward Bernays. We've never seen propaganda in the United States like we've seen over the last 2 years. I've never seen anything like this, ever. I doubt within the history of the United States we've ever had people plugged into so much incredible propaganda. But they seem to have entered a phase where they can't really decide which one they want to go with. This is a horribly deadly disease and we all need to run for our lives, or, well, it's here, we're just going to have to live with it, it's endemic. I don't know. I did a stack of headlines yesterday, but there's been a lot of stuff. You know, Joe Biden came out and said, look, there's not going to be any federal solution to this. Of course, after he promised on the campaign trail, Trump doesn't have a plan, but I do. I'll beat COVID. And of course, his results have been absolutely horrific. Notwithstanding his sending out 400 million N95 masks again, that's like his releasing. And he did this from the Strategic Reserve. I guess we've got a strategic reserve of PPE. And this is exactly like his strategic release or his release of the strategic petroleum reserves, which was about 2.5 days of American consumption of oil. Well, if you send out 400 million masks to 330 million people, you fix them up for about a day. Now, I know a lot of people out there are taking these N95 masks, and they've been using cloth masks day after day after day for weeks and probably months. The bacteria want to thank you. They've never had such a nice, dark, moist environment ever on planet Earth. They're digging it. I would imagine it's a large reason of why we're seeing the hospitals clogged right now, because you people are breeding bacteria like a beekeeper. In that thing that now, these N95s, they kind of poke out. They look like a beak. So releasing 400 million N95 masks, it gets America through about a day and a half, I guess, if everybody properly changes these things daily. But we went from Joe Biden says there's no federal response. Over the weekend and the end of last week, there was a lot of talk about we need to learn to live with this. It's endemic. Even the Pfizer CEO, as of yesterday, said life will get back to normal by the spring. This is the Pfizer CEO. It almost felt like they were just saying, all right, we're on to the next stage of this thing. I don't know how they're going to profit from it, if it's going to be annual shots. They've just settled in to, you know, maybe they're reading the winds and saying, you know, the people don't seem like they're going to be down with 6-7 shots here. So let's back off. We've already made hundreds of billions of dollars, and let's just settle in on an annual shot, or maybe every 6 months, or one for every variant. Pfizer is rushing out the variant for the, vaccine version 1.1 for the Omicron, and they plan to release that sometime in March, long after this variant's gone. So maybe that's what they're going to do. They're just going to chase variants, and they think that's their profit motive. But even the head of Pfizer said, you know, life's going to be back to normal in just a couple of months. Then on Tuesday, talk about a whiplash. I mean, it was just one day later. The headlines were, models 50,000 to 300,000 more dead in USA by spring. They're predicting 300,000 more deaths by spring. Now, that's not going to be from the Omicron. We already know that that's mild for the vast majority of people. So I'm not sure what they're seeing there. Those of us who have been talking about the clot shots, we have our suspicions, don't we? 1 million cases in California in 1 week. This is a headline. WHO chief says pandemic, quote, nowhere near over. And Australia suffers its worst day, as I already reported. Australia, with its zero COVID, now has one of the highest case counts in the world. Israel, 4 shots, still not enough. So I'm not sure exactly what is going on, where they have maybe have decided that the propaganda was starting to wear off, so now they're going to go with absolute mass confusion. Is the Omicron deadly? Is it not? Do the shots work? Do they not? Do the boosters matter? Do they not? You can't wear the cloth masks anymore. They finally gave up the ghost on that. I don't even sure why they changed that narrative. People were so willingly using these ineffective masks. Nobody was really complaining about it. The people who had settled into this as a fashion statement were wearing them every day. And then all of a sudden, they just come out and go, oh, yeah, cloth masks. No, they've never been any good. Now, of course, I went to Kroger yesterday and saw plenty of people wearing the cloth masks still. But it's just interesting to see this flip-flop. I can't really decide. I'm always kind of looking for the motives, looking for how this manipulation is more effective than the last one, because they're going for something here. Anyway, we'll see. Alan Ramsey sent an article to the host here yesterday about truckers clogging up the U.S.-Canada border in protest of there's new vax rules, apparently, for truckers going across the border. I believe you can't cross the border without being vaxxed. It may be only heading into Canada, I'm not sure, but it was such a beautiful sight. Miles and miles of trucks honking their horns, waving their flags, clogging up the roadways up there, and not allowing transit across these entry and exit points. And it's going to be inconvenient for us, of course, with all the looting going on in California. You're not getting your packages anyway. But, you know, it really struck me yesterday in looking at this, and we may have talked about this before, but there are three groups of people, really, that could just about shut down this entire tyranny all by themselves should they all come together and just make up their minds to do it. This is their chance to be heroes. And truckers are one of the top ones. The truckers stop things, the elites have problems. They just are going to have problems. You cannot stop truckers and have a nation that does not devolve into just mass rioting almost immediately. So the truckers, the nurses could have stood up against this thing. They know what's going on. A lot of nurses took the clot shot because they wanted to keep their job, but they know they're so much more awake than the doctors, or they're so much more courageous than the doctors because their salaries aren't quite as big. They're willing to go out and find other work. Doctors are cowards because they got that big check to protect. They can't go against the system because they've got too much invested. They've got a lifestyle built up around that big salary. Not all of them. Plenty of them have made some sacrifices. But for the vast majority of them, they're not as strong as the nurses. And I would love to see hospitals where the nurses just said, you know what? We're done. We're out. How long do you think doctors would change bedpans before they begged these nurses back? We've already seen nurses who were fired for not taking the shot are sitting on the sidelines kind of giggling, I guess. It's sad. It's not funny. As hospitals are begging nurses who are currently sick with COVID to come back to work. These are hospitals. They tell you, they give you advice. They tell you that they are there for your health, yet they are willing to fire an uninfected, unvaccinated nurse, but they will plop a COVID-positive nurse right into your hospital room with you. It's absolutely amazing. So truckers and nurses and then attorneys. Truckers, nurses, and attorneys could shut this entire tyranny down by themselves if they wanted to. It's a missed opportunity, but it's also a chance for them to flex their muscle. And it would be so refreshing to see these groups come together. I think, you know, nurses, truckers, attorneys, I hope, are in the background. I don't know any attorneys who are really looking into this issue of mandates at the primarily at the business level, you know, employers who are demanding the shots of their employees or firing them. I don't know if there are any attorneys back there behind the scenes kind of poking and prodding at this stuff, trying to find the Achilles heel and get in and find some liabilities for somebody somewhere. If an employer mandates a vaccine and a worker gets an adverse event that irreparably destroys their lives, there's got to be a way an attorney can get in there. So these three groups, they could be the American heroes, could have been this whole time. But the thing about propaganda, the thing about fear-mongering is it just picks off the weakest people first. It really kind of scatters any solidarity. And it came so quickly, and they used such force of fear with this that I think that none of these groups really had a chance in the initial stages of this thing to come together and put together a coordinated response. But maybe it's happening now. If you haven't seen the truckers shutting down the Canadian border, take a look at it. If you are part of the resistance, it's a beautiful thing to see. When I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about this Tonga thing. There's, like I say, I'm a coincidence theorist. There was just something kind of interesting that went on in Tonga 4 days, 4 days before the volcanic eruption. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with me. What's your frequency? Can it be shot? Things are drained. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Next hour, Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use. I have a long segment on the benefits of fasting, and this is the time of the year I do that segment every year. I hope people might join me or try it. I'm not, don't know, there may be some conditions where it's not advised, so you do your own research, but a lot of historical, thousands and thousands of years of science of fasting, and I do it every year. I'm doing it now, so we'll talk about it next hour. Also, on the health front, today is the rally down at the Capitol put on by Mississippi Parents for Vaccine Rights. They are doing a medical freedom rally. I talked to Mary Jo Perry about it yesterday. It's so interesting. Medical freedom really was not really a concern for most Americans. I was offering you freedom in terms of an escape from the medical system for the last 5 years here, but true medical freedom where we didn't know we were going to be pinned down or blackmailed into taking part in a grand experiment. So medical freedom is a big issue now. They are down at the Capitol pretty much all day today from 9:30 until the afternoon. And you need to get down there and show your support. A lot of great people involved with these organizations that are passionate about making sure that parents have the final say when it comes to their kids, whether it's masks or whether it's shots. And we've got a legislature not known for protecting the freedom Mississippi parents. So get down there and see them again. That's down at the Capitol today. The weather is supposed to be absolutely fantastic for most of the day until the storm hits tonight. And then I guess we're back to winter tomorrow, which means this is exactly as I predicted. We've seen all of the headlines around COVID around the country. It didn't feel like a lot was going on here because we've had such mild weather, but I knew as soon as we got this cold snap, it was going to happen, and it is happening. We are starting to see the reports. I watched some local news yesterday out of morbid curiosity of what they're talking about these days, and they are raising the alarm bells, expect in the next couple of weeks, because so many people are testing, so many cases are out there, they're expecting the hospitals to be overwhelmed. So they're going to be coming after the schools again soon. I've already seen reports of the Lamar County School demanding vaccination cards from people and having different rules for the vaxxed and unvaxxed kids. Some schools have already gone remote. This is going to continue for the next, 4 to 6 weeks probably until we see this thing through. So support Mississippi Parents for Vaccine Rights and this rally today because legislators, people in charge need to know people are not putting up with this any longer. So I wanted to talk about Tonga. There was this volcano, underwater volcano, that erupted the other day. The footage was fascinating. It was a huge eruption, according to satellite stuff. And I made mention of what I found was odd was there was a satellite directly above this thing. Now, I don't understand all the things that can be done with technology and moving things around. Like, have you seen these videos where people will go through a room and it's like everybody is stop motion? Maybe somebody's juggling and the balls are still in the air, but this camera goes between the people. I don't know if that's CGI. I don't know if there's some camera that spins around at a great speed and takes these pictures, and then you can freeze it and move, you know, from different perspectives. I'm probably being confusing and talk. I don't understand all of the technology out there, but this satellite was directly above this thing. I found that interesting because it's a big planet, and to have a satellite not a little to the right, not a little to the left, but directly above this thing just felt perfect. I'm just saying. It just felt odd. If you look at the footage of this thing, you will see it comes straight up, and the camera has got this thing zeroed in dead center. I'm not saying anything about that. Again, it may be some technological thing I don't understand, but I thought it was odd. And then I ran across this. So this explosion has gone off. It's a human tragedy. The islands of Tonga are covered in ash. They had a communications cable. You know, they do these deep water cables. Another thing that is just mystifying to me, these cables that crisscross, I guess, the ocean floor, or maybe they're held up by buoys along the way, but these things stretch thousands of miles, I guess, to connect continents. Their communication cable was severed. And this is a big problem because people are not able to get reports from Tonga because they're cut off from the rest of the world. And this is a South Pacific country, a nation of a bunch of different islands. People don't know what's going on. Even their airport is down. They're not able to land planes there, my understanding. So to take aid, I believe they're dropping stuff to them. It's a human tragedy. Really, really sad stuff. But I ran across a story that just kind of piqued my interest, and I did what I do, which is do a little bit more research, and found out that this is a tweet that was sent out by the leader of Tonga, Lord Fusitu, F-U-S-I-T-U, Lord Fusitu. He has made a big proposal there. El Salvador was the first country to make Bitcoin legal tender. Now, I'm back and forth on cryptocurrencies. I'm not really back and forth. I just am willing to admit I don't know what role they play. I love the fact that they may supersede government fiat currencies, but there's just so much with it that I think could go wrong that I don't really have a stance pro or against. I don't really know exactly what the future of these things are. I know people are passionate on both sides, very smart people on both sides, so that makes it difficult for me to figure out what it is. But El Salvador made Bitcoin a legal tender in their country. They were the first one, I believe, and maybe the only one right now. Well, Tonga had just decided that they were also going to make Bitcoin legal tender in their country. This is a tweet that was sent out January 11th by Lord Fusitu. He's got a timeline of how Bitcoin becomes legal tender. And it gets even more interesting. Hang in there with me. He said, September, October, the bill goes to Parliament, passed, sent to Palace Office for submission to His Majesty for royal assent. About a month, HM, as advised by Privy Council, assents to bill. I guess this is all just means, you know, he's going to sign off on it. The Privy Council, I guess, is going to sign off on it. Then he says, 2 to 3 weeks, gazetted. I don't know what this means. Gazetted by government activation date set, and 4, on activation date set, Bitcoin becomes legal tender. So they were planning on being the second country in the world to make Bitcoin legal tender there. Now, the story goes on to talk about the fact that Tonga's biggest income generator is remittances from people who live in foreign countries. We know a lot about the fact that we have a lot of remittances from the U.S. back to Mexico, right? People immigrate here, either break in or legally, and then they earn money in the United States and they send it back to their families in Mexico. Well, Tonga, I believe the number was, I don't have it right in front of me, it might be something like 45%, 44% of their whole GDP is remittances from other countries. Well, obviously they don't have a huge GDP. We're not talking about U.S. or China-sized economies. But that's a lot of money that is floating back to Tonga. Right now, I'm sure that the bankers are making a good little bit of money on all of these transfers. You know, you don't do remittances for free unless you're doing them through Bitcoin. So there's that. But the bottom line is they were about to make this a legal tender there. Now, one of the reasons this kind of sets off an alarm with me is that I do know that prior to the invasion of Iraq, Saddam Hussein had said he was going to start trading his oil in euros, I believe. Libya was setting up a new, basically a new gold standard. They were going to issue a new gold-backed dinar, and they wanted to use it for the African continent. Now, we know what happened to Iraq. We know what happened to Libya. Syria also, and I can't remember the date, Syria had announced that they were going to start trading their oil, I believe in euros, maybe other currencies as well. You know, all of these countries have been trading their oil in dollars for forever. That's the petrodollar, and it's one of the things that has held up the U.S. dollar. Even with the massive debt that we have, the insolvency that the U.S. has, the dollar has been propped up largely by the petrodollar, meaning the world's oil markets are traded in dollars. Yet Iraq was about to buck that trend, and you see what's happened to Saddam Hussein. Libya was going to buck that trend with a gold-backed dinar, and you see what happened to Libya. Syria was making moves to start trading their oil, the oil we're currently stealing right now. They were going to trade it on the world market in currencies other than the U.S. dollar, and we see what happened to Syria. These things tend to follow. And so it's just a little interesting that Tonga, 4 days after they make this announcement that Bitcoin is about to become legal tender of their island's nation, suddenly their communication is cut and they have this huge explosion. Now, again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a coincidence theorist. And when I come back, I'll explain to you why it gets even just a little bit weirder. Because there was a plan in Tonga as to how they were going to mine for Bitcoin. I'll do that when we come back.
You can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
We're the Renegades, it is atomic. All right, so let's get into this Tonga thing. I find this pretty fascinating stuff. Even, again, I'm not being a conspiracy theorist, but I am being a coincidence theorist. So on January 11th, the leader of Tonga Nation, the Tonga Islands, comes out and says, we're about to make Bitcoin legal tender. Now, understand, I don't believe the banks really want this decentralized, out-of-their-hands cryptocurrency. This is why I hesitate to believe that Bitcoin is going to make it, that it is somehow going to escape the grasp. I think governments will outlaw it. Somehow the banks will co-opt it. I know the central banks want to control the money supply. They want to set up their own digital coins. They're making moves to do that around the world. Banks don't like competition. They really don't like competition. And so I believe they're powerful and will put these things down. To what extent they will? Well, let's look at the story. So on January 11th, the president sends out something to Tongans saying, hey, we're about to start using Bitcoin as legal tender here in our country. Now, what's interesting is how they're going to do that. Here's the headline of a story that ran January 14th, 2 days before the volcanic eruption, which we're calling for right now the coincidental eruption. So this is a story on Cointelegraph that I found yesterday. Volcanoes, Bitcoin, and remittances. A Tongan lord plans for financial security. A former lawmaker from the island nation wants to use Bitcoin to secure his country's financial security. I'm going to read a good deal from the story because I think find it fascinating. Former member of the Tongan parliament is behind a proposal to make Bitcoin legal tender in the tiny Pacific nation of Tonga, following in the footsteps of El Salvador. It's due for a vote in parliament in May, and the early signs are encouraging. Now, they're going to make me pronounce some of these names. Matatula, Lord Fushitu told CoinGraph that plans are in motion to use state-run volcano mining facilities to create wealth in Tonga. Tonga has 21 volcanoes. That means one volcano for every 5,000 people. He, this leader, actually owns one volcano himself through his family's hereditary land rights. So this tells you, you know, why a leader's doing something for his people. The proposed Bitcoin mining operations would use the geothermal energy of the volcanoes to generate power. And for those of you that don't understand Bitcoin, and I barely do, it takes you mine Bitcoin using very complex computer algorithms and programs to solve large mathematical equations, and it takes a ton of energy to actually power the computer to solve these things. It's all beyond me. But the bottom line is, if you want to mine Bitcoin, make money using Bitcoin, you have to extend a tremendous amount of energy. It makes it prohibitive for you and me to just get a laptop and think we can solve these equations and make money on Bitcoin. You have to have a tremendous amount of computing power, my understanding is, and a tremendous amount of power. Well, the Tongans said, hey, we've got all this geothermal energy. We got 21 volcanoes laying around here. We'll use that energy to mine Bitcoin for our people. And just listen to how it was going to affect the island. It takes 2 megawatts of electricity to service 5,000 people. So 40,000 megawatts will service the entire national grid. Each volcano produces 95,000 megawatts at all times, leaving much to spare. Quote, we will give every family hash huts. And my understanding is that would be an operation to mine Bitcoin, to use all of this excess energy that they have in Tonga from these volcanoes, the geothermal energy. They would give them a setup to mine Bitcoin. So they said, quote, we will give every family hash huts, but this is only 20,000 units as there are only 20,000 families. He suggests each volcano can generate $2,000 of Bitcoin each day to be, quote, gifted to each family by the Tongan government. Tonga needs $26 million for the cabling to build the operation, but the World Bank said Tonga didn't have the collateral for that funding. So we finally found an operation that the World Bank won't lend money to. The World Bank loves to indebt countries and then come take their stuff. We've talked about economic hitmen before here on this show. Nevertheless, Tonga managed to raise the money through a Least Development Countries grant, given Lord Fuchida's influence on local politics and the fact he claims to own a volcano himself, he might just pull it off. Lord Fusitu also claimed to have negotiated a gratis offer of the mining tech, but he's not revealed the terms of the deal. Chinese companies such as Bitmain have much market share in this space. It's also possible that that refugee mining operations from China's recent ban could be headed to Tonga. For now, that still remains a mystery. Quote, for a nation state, the math doesn't change. The optimal state is for a state to have its own mining. So, Tonga was planning their economic freedom. They were not going to be using traditional banks for remittances. They decided that Bitcoin was going to become their legal tender, and they were going to use volcanoes to accomplish this. 2 days after this story is published, 4 days after the president sends out a tweet saying Bitcoin is on its way as legal tender, the islands are destroyed, essentially, in a spontaneous, what feels coincidental, volcanic eruption. If it hadn't been for the fact that I know that each of these Middle Eastern leaders who talked about getting off the dollar standard and trading their oil, each time they announced that, within about 2 years, their country is toppled. This makes me a little suspicious. Now, again, I'm a coincidence theorist. This could be an amazing coincidence. I saw when I tried to find these stories yesterday and searched for them, I searched Bitcoin Tonga. All I saw was Tongans were receiving, people were contributing Bitcoins in donations to the poor people of Tonga. I found that interesting. How in the hell does a Tongan get his Bitcoins if they have no cabling, they're cut off from the outside world and no internet? This is also one of those vulnerabilities of cryptocurrencies, in my opinion. What happens when the grid goes down? And you can see this real-world example of the fact that the grid does occasionally actually really go down, as it is in Tonga right now. So I guess they've got a bunch of Bitcoin floating out there, headed their way to help them rebuild, but they can't access any of them. So I don't know exactly how that's going to work. But it could be also, could it be that some of these mining operations were monkeying around in these volcanoes and just had a pretty big oopsie? I have no idea the technology or the processes that allow you to tap into geothermal energy, but I would imagine it has something to do with creating or exploiting some vent on one of these things. You've obviously got to capture the heat that is coming from underneath the ground to heat something up or create pressure to turn something to generate the electricity that they were planning on using to mine Bitcoin. So did somebody drill a inopportune hole trying to make this thing happen? I don't know. As I say, I just found it interesting, the combination of them getting into their own currency, kind of separating, giving their people financial freedom, at the same time utilizing volcanic activity to make that happen. And within a few days, they have a huge volcanic eruption that basically ends their way of life down there for quite some time. It's just one of those things. You can just categorize that. If I had a segment title for that, it would be, I don't know, I'm just saying. That's pretty much it. Be back in a minute. Stay with me. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Wednesday. So we go every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock. We have Hump Day Health, natural health news you can use, where I try to help you. I am the Harriet Tubman, trying to lead you out of the medical apartheid, the medical system that has sickened so many people. It takes me straight to my quote of the day today from Jamie Oliver. I think this guy is, I see a picture of him. I think he's a celebrity chef, but he makes a good point here. He said, homicide is 0.8% of deaths. Diet-related disease is over 60%, but no one talks about it. You stop and think about that for a second. We've talked about the violence erupting in major cities, particularly in Jackson, has got a huge spike in the murder rate. Was it 153 people last year? Yeah, that's true. But there were thousands of people who died last year from preventable nutritional deaths. Or anti-nutritional deaths, so it's something that's actually valuable. If you want to save lives, law and order is not the only way to do it. You can listen to the show, reclaim your health and those and the health of those that you love. I start every show by explaining to you, I am not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, not a biologist, not an immunologist, not a virologist, not a nurse, not a surgeon, not a therapist, I'm nothing. I've got no certification to advise you on your health. I'm just trying to drop some breadcrumbs that maybe you'll pick up and start taking control of your health. If you haven't figured out over the last couple of years, you are the one that's responsible for your health. The authorities, number one, they can't handle all of you. Even the best doctor cannot be in charge of your health and the health of your children. They don't have time. They've got about 500 to 1,000 patients they see each year. But also, if you haven't noticed, the medical authorities are wrong, wronger, and wrongest on so many different issues, nutrition certainly being one of them. And then that leads us into the rest of them. Speaking of the medical establishment, here is your AMA, your American Medical Association, what they think of you and your ability to make decisions for yourself. They're not a big fan. The president of the Chicago-based American Medical Association, Gerald E. Harmon, MD, wrote on Friday in Crain's Chicago Business that employers should impose COVID vaccine mandates as a condition of employment. Last week's decision by the United States Supreme Court invalidating the Biden administration's attempt to force employers to do so, quote, should not, unquote, Harmon wrote, quote, prevent these employers from doing what must be done in the name of public health, requiring vaccines to protect their workers, our communities, and our nation from the ravages of this pandemic. The AMA, the American Medical Association, wants you to be forced to take an experimental shot that is not working. He didn't say this at the beginning of the rollout of the shots, where maybe there was still some hope that they were going to end the pandemic. No, this is the head of the American Medical Association that is looking at the results from this inoculation program, this grand experiment. He has to see the massive failures and the way they're changing the goalposts constantly, but he still thinks that your employer should force you to take this shot. Remember that next time you're in your doctor's office and you see his certificate up there as a proud member of the American Medical Association. other health authorities and their records. We'll go ahead and get into that now, too. I ran across a tweet. USA cumulative age-adjusted COVID mortality per 100,000. It goes down into the 50-state list plus the District of Columbia. Guess where Mississippi lands? You know, and I guess people are going to say, well, we don't have enough people with the jab. We don't have enough people wearing masks. I don't know what you think you're dealing with here, but Mississippi is 51st out of the 50 states. Nice job there, Thomas Dobbs. Now let's look at, see if we can find some of the states that did nothing, that did far, far, far better than us. I'm looking for South Dakota was 35. Let's see if we can find Florida on here. Florida gave their, and it has the most aged population, I believe, in the country. Where is Florida on this thing? Oh, there they are at 25. Florida did nothing with the oldest population, I think, in the country. There may be a state or two. Texas has got a lot of retirees, too. But Florida, excuse me, they were at 21. With 228.7 in the age-adjusted COVID mortality per 100,000, Mississippi was at 376.6. So if you think you should trust your Mississippi health authorities, now really the obvious conclusion of that is that Mississippians are just so darn sick and out of shape. We're known to be the obesity capital, the diabetes capital. It was bound and determined that it didn't matter what bug came across the landscape, we were going to see the worst of it because we're an unhealthy state, and that's what this show is meant to address. But anyway, nice job there, Thomas Dobbs. You got a real record you can run on there. Oh, let's see what else we had. I had kind of a, well, you know, I talked about this a little bit the other day, but I did have it in this segment. Study finds did a thing. Talking politics tends to give many people a splitting headache. Now a new study confirms that the American political scene really does harm a person's overall health. A researcher from University of Nebraska notes that 4 in 10 people cite politics as a top stressor in their lives. Many add the topic causes them to lose sleep and fractures their relationships. Alarmingly, 1 in 20 even say thinking about and discussing politics leaves them feeling suicidal. One of the headlines, subheadlines in this story is "Changing Presidents Doesn't Help." Yeah, you think? Look, if you are allowing politics to dictate your life, stealing your joy, fracturing relationships, I got to tell you, you're not doing yourself any favors. You're not making any changes, letting it wreck your life. I love being in the fight. I'm a freedom fighter. That's what I care about. I don't care about political parties. I'm the anti-politics show, really, because I don't do this cross hate agitation pointing at each other. But I will tell you about the corruption at the top that you need to take your support away from. But don't let politics fracture relationships. Don't let it harm your health. Laugh a lot, regardless of what's going on, as serious as it can be. And certainly on this show, I talk about a lot of serious things on this show, but it is not worth sacrificing your health and your relationships over something as like politics. We're already sick enough as a society to allow these nut jobs at the top. I don't care if it's Trump or Biden, to somehow work you into a tizzy that affects your health and your relationships is absolutely insane. I will say there are a lot of people sick these days. Now, there's also a lot of people who are hypochondriacing their way into skipping work and skipping school by just rushing out and taking a test, even though they feel no symptoms whatsoever. So it's a very bizarre time to be alive. But there are a lot of people who are experiencing cold-like symptoms up to flu-like symptoms. I don't know if it's a cold, a flu. I don't know if it's the Omicron variant. I don't know what it is. But there are a lot of people that are down right now. Something's definitely going around. It's not dangerous. It is what every other year would not even be mentioned on the national news media. We have gone through seasons where a lot of people were out of work. A lot of kids were out of school constantly. But I know a lot of people who are down right now. And I ran across this clip. One of the things, I've probably talked about it before, is cough syrups. So this was the story. I believe this was on an ABC affiliate.
Southwest Florida is not immune to the national cough medicine shortage.
Actually, I've been seeing it for a long time now.
Pharmacist Justin Saravallo told me some of the cough medicine could have been sold to pet owners.
only certain things that can be used in pets because of the dangers of other medications. So the one medication that is working is the one that's not available.
Low stock of cough medicine could be because of two reasons. One is the demand. Massive amounts of people and pets are sick all at once. Secondly, the labor shortage, not having enough drivers to deliver products to the stores.
Essentially, when you put those two factors together, the warehouse is being shut down for periods of time, and then also the higher demand, they're not able to keep up with it.
Pharmacies farther out may have a better stock.
So I was not aware of giving your pets cough syrup. I haven't had a dog for about a year. I thought that was just on a Seinfeld episode where Kramer took Smucker's medicine, but apparently people are giving their dogs cough medicine. I've never heard of such a thing, but here's the thing about cough medicine, and I would imagine with the supply chains broken, I've been into some of the dollar store type places or pharmacy stores, CVS, Walgreens, those kinds of things. And boy, their shelves have just been stripped bare for months now on supply chain issues. But if you're rushing out to get cough medicine, I've got some news for you. This was just one story I ran across, an easy one to clip. Ever wonder why you're still hacking even after dousing yourself with cough meds? It might be because it's likely your over-the-counter cough medicines don't help at all. According to a new video from the American Chemical Society's Reactions series, quote, there is very little evidence that cough syrup is effective at treating your cough. The scientists say in the video, that's what they concluded after they analyzed all the available evidence, including systematic reviews that pulled data from multiple scientific studies. In fact, in one review of 19 studies, 15 showed either no benefit of over-the-counter cough meds or conflicting results with them. And I have probably broached this subject before, maybe around this time of year, as people are getting colds and flus and things like that, and everybody rushes out to get their cough syrups. These things don't work. Now, I was raised on Robitussin. I can still taste it in my mouth right now. I used to hate that stuff, but my parents would always give me Robitussin anytime I had a cough. Cough syrups have shown basically no benefit whatsoever. These are chemical cocktails, another big swing and a miss from our pharmaceutical masters. But there are things that you can do. I've got links to this story, but really you don't need me on this one. You can always email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. I've got some audio I'm going to play on fasting when we come back that you may want to listen to again. So you can always email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com, and I'll send you show notes from the day's show. And you can also get this article that talks about alternatives to cough syrups. But there's plenty of information out there. You can do all kinds of searches on the internet for natural treatment for coughs, and you're going to find all kinds of things that are better than or equal to. I mean, if you want to do nothing, which is what most cough syrups do, you can do that all on your own. You don't have to rush out and go from pharmacy to pharmacy to pharmacy trying to seek out what is apparently a rare commodity in cough syrup right now. One of the first ones recommended on this site, which is naturallysavvy.com. But again, I'll be honest, I didn't put a ton of work into this because I know there's just a million different sites out there that have got alternatives for symptoms for everything, but particularly in coughs. They list tea. Journal of Herbal Pharmacology or Pharmacotherapy reported that a mixture of eight herbs, aris, black seed, caraway, cardamom, chamomile, fennel, licorice, and saffron, provided significant improvements in cough intensity and frequency among individuals with allergic asthma. Honey. Honey is the big one. That's the one that I use and have used with my kids. For kids age 2 and older, as well as adults, honey is a winner for beating cough. In a study of 105 young people ages 2 to 18, honey was compared with treatment with no treatment and honey-flavored dextromethorphan, that's the chemical cocktail that cough syrups are, to evaluate its effect on coughing during the night and sleep quality. Parents rated honey as providing the best symptomatic relief. Boost your cough fighting powers by mixing organic honey and or fresh lemon juice with herbal tea. They say for under age 2, you can use agave syrup. I believe there's a botulism worry with honey for very, very small children that don't have a fully functioning immune system. I believe that's it. They go through this and say peppermint, fenugreek, marshmallow,
not the white puffs that go into chocolate, but the herb is an effective cough treatment. Slippery elm, Andrographis paniculata. This is a Chinese Ayurvedic. I think that's right. I'm having some troubles today. I'm not a scientist, I told you. It's a Chinese remedy. And then probiotics, they talk about, while they don't have a direct impact on your cough, having good, healthy gut bacteria boosts your immune system, and the cough will be behind you in a shorter period of time. So anyway, if you're rushing out to try to comb the shelves to get a hold of that cough syrup, it may be just a giant swing and a miss. This was Brett Weinstein. Maybe he's listened to the Mike Madison show over the past 5 years, as I have threatened to call this show the Vitamin D Show.
Inflammatory accusation. Now, I know, because I have been tracking the very same question, that the degree to which public health authorities fail to recommend that which works and continue to recommend things that either do not work or are risky, that it, if you start with the model of public health authorities, let's say we've got three different models. Public health authorities are basically competent and they're doing as well as they can in light of an emerging situation. Public health authorities are incompetent and they are doing as well as they can, which isn't very well at all. Or public health authorities are actively doing that which prolongs the pandemic and causes COVID to continue to spread. Actually, the third model is the most predictive. It is surprising. I can't imagine why anyone would want this. And I am continually looking for that sign that, in fact, this is, at, you know, it would be better if it was incompetence, because at least we can do something about that. The problem is incompetence just doesn't explain it. And vitamin D, to me, is the obvious proof of this, because when you look into the truth of vitamin D, as is beautifully presented in your most recent paper, which I have here, it turns out that the fears that we might have about vitamin D are ill-founded. They are, in fact, based on an over-extrapolation of what happens with vitamin A.
And so this was in a segment where they just explained it. What Brett Weinstein is saying is, he said, you know, I'd like to think that our people are competent and they're doing the best they can. And if that's not the case, I'd like to think they're just incompetent and they're doing the best they can, which is not very good. But the third thing is, our health authorities are actively prolonging this emergency for some other reason. And the evidence of that, to Brett Weinstein, is that it will not mention vitamin D, even though study after 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 study shows that you improve your overall health and certainly have better outcomes with COVID and a whole range of other conditions, viruses, bacterial, in fact, it doesn't matter. Vitamin D is so vital to your immune system, and Americans are notoriously vitamin D deficient. Here in Mississippi, with the worst COVID outcomes per 100,000 in age-related deaths, we have a large black population which does not absorb vitamin D as quickly as fairer-skinned people do, so you probably need to supplement if you're not spending a ton of time in the sun, and we're chronically overweight. But the vitamin D thing that's been left off of the protocols could have been a very empowering thing. And, you know, the other thing about this that struck me today, we're 2 years in now. 2 years into this, where you have known, everybody has known, that being unhealthy leaves you more vulnerable to a disease. Now enough time has passed that anybody who was actually interested in protecting themselves wouldn't be wearing a mask that doesn't work. They wouldn't be lining up for an experimental shot. We're 2 years into this thing now. Anybody who is truly concerned about their health, the health of themselves and their loved ones, that were really wanted to make sure that they did not fall victim to this virus, would have gotten their health in order. Would have lost the weight, would have supplemented with vitamin D and zinc and all of these things. We're far enough in now that you've had every opportunity to completely turn your health around if you had actually been concerned. And if you think you're just relying on mask and an experimental shot, that's just flat out lazy. And you're seeing the results of it right now as cases spike around the country. As I said, I've threatened to call this the Vitamin D Show because it's so important to your health. I'll be right back. right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. And we're doing Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Use, which is what we do every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock, trying to I think it's one of the most empowering segments on Central Mississippi Radio, because this is about you finding a way, understanding there's a different approach you can take to your own health, and you can fix things within yourself. Your body wants to heal. Your optimum state is what your body is always striving for if you give it what it needs. Give it the raw materials it needs, and you'll find improvements. I want to remind everybody that today is the Health Freedom Rally down at the Capitol. If you can take your lunch and go down there, you got some time. It's supposed to be beautiful weather. It's Mississippi Parents for Vaccine Rights putting on this health freedom thing. We need health freedom in this country. The legislature needs to know the citizenry is engaged on this issue before they get back into session and start passing mandates or stepping aside and letting school boards mandate to their children, all these kinds of stuff. So get down there today if you can. This is fasting week for me. I am 2 days in. It's been about 48 hours since I've had anything to eat except for water and a little bit of coffee. I was a little nervous about detoxing off of my caffeine, but black coffee does not break a fast, so I've had a little bit of black coffee this morning. But there's one rule, kind of like, you know, they say Fight Club. One rule about Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. For me, there's one rule about fasting, and that is when you're doing a fast or entering a fast or in the middle of one, talk about fasting. Talk about the benefits, because there are times that will hit you during the course of a fast where you think, now, is this really worth it? I don't get hungry, but I do see things I want to eat. I show up at the studio today. I'm humming along. I feel great. No problem. 48 hours, no food, just water. And there's a bag of salted cashews sitting there in the kitchen area. That's very cruel. I don't know if that was done on purpose or not, but I love sea salted cashews. Anyway, there are times where you just think, boy, do I really want to bother to do this? But I believe it is a fantastic ability to reset your system. During the course of a fast, I watch and read a lot of material on fasting to remind myself of the benefits, because it's not the hunger that kills me. I'm not really not hungry at all. I just kind of, you know, you get into the habit of eating. There's some things you run across in the grocery store. You think, ooh, that would taste good right now. And you got to get past those things. So I wanted to play. This is a long segment. I'll probably have to break it into two parts. It is Dr. Eric Berg. He's got one of the best YouTube channels out there when it comes to natural health stuff. You can go to YouTube and search Dr. Berg, and it's B-E-R-G, and pretty much any condition you've got, and I bet you he's got a video on it. He and Dr. Axe, Dr. Hyman, Dr. Mercola, they've got videos on just about everything, and boy, they have helped me more over the past 15 years than the AMA ever thought about doing. So he's got a fantastic video here that I'm going to play the audio of about the benefits of prolonged fasting. Now, this may not be for everybody. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist, not a biologist. And there may be some conditions where fasting is not advised. You may be on some medications you can't do without, or they might break the fast and negate the fast. There may be things within your life where fasting is not great for you. But the idea of human beings going 24, 48, 72 hours without eating, that is not historically rare. Human beings are well adapted to not eat. And what I do it for primarily is, number one, I indulge in December during the holidays. As I say, I let my freak flag fly when it comes to food. And so I always get a little excited in January that I'm going to kind of clean things up. And when you are not eating, there's a process called autophagy that goes in and kind of clears up all damaged proteins and damaged cells and kind of, you know, spit shines the place. And that's the reason that I fast. I've been doing this every January and sometimes again in July or halfway through the year. I'll do another few days. But I've been doing it now for probably about 10 years. I hadn't had a sick day in 15 years. I don't think it's just this fasting, but it is a great boost to the immune system as well as your body repairs itself and gets itself in order. So anyway, if you're considering any of these things, and a fast can be anything from intermittent fasting, which a lot of people are taking to these days, saves time. I think it's great. We do not need to be stuffing our pie holes full of food every 2 hours. I don't know if you've noticed, but the more we eat, the sicker we get. So there's everything from intermittent fasting, which is just kind of controlling your eating within like an 8 hour or 6 hour or 4 hour window in the day and not eating the rest of the day. Or there is or prolonged fast of anywhere from 24 hours, 36. Some people do 5 day, 7 day, 30 day fasts. Your body can withstand these things. And they are great. Like I say, I think they're just a fantastic reset. Anyway, we're going to let Dr. Berg tell you and I'm going to listen to why I'm doing this, because it always helps. I got to tell you, it always helps to hear these things. There's a ton of benefits, and he's going to talk about a little bit about how to do it, but mainly the benefits of prolonged fasting.
Hey guys, today we're going to talk about the 8 major benefits from prolonged fasting. Now, prolonged fasting is where you'd go 48, 72 hours or longer, sometimes a week, sometimes 21 days, sometimes even longer. There's some interesting benefits that occur when you do this. The body goes into this survival mode. It's kind of like a physiological vacation for your organs, especially for your digestive system, because every time you eat, you kind of like shut down that system. The people that eat frequently, let's say you're doing 3 meals plus 2 snacks, never have a chance to get these amazing benefits. Let's start with number 1. You actually regrow your brain cells. Not the entire brain, but very specific parts of the brain, including the hippocampus, parts of the brainstem, and other parts as well. So that's really cool. I mean, how many of you could use some extra brain cells? So the part of the hippocampus that's regenerated has to do with memory. Okay, there's like a relay switch in there that helps you get access to your database, your memory, your file cabinet of memories. So you're able to regrow that structure of the brain to improve memory. That's really, really cool. Okay, number 2, increase mitochondria. The mitochondria are the energy factories of the body. So you're going to find that your energy goes straight through the roof. Incredible amounts of energy when you don't eat. Well, remember, you're burning your fat. So you are eating. You're just not eating dietary calories. Number 3, autophagy. This is a condition in your body whereby it recycles old damaged proteins, okay? And other things like microbes and damaged mitochondria. So it's kind of a good self-cleaning action going on. And you recycle these proteins into new proteins to build new tissue. This is the epitome of anti-aging. But in order to get in this, you want to do prolonged fasting. Now, I do recommend doing intermittent fasting once a month or once every other month, or even like 4 times a year would be great. All right, next one is enhanced stem cell production. The stem cell is the cell without a purpose. It's not differentiated into a specific cell yet. It just sits there until the body says, I need a new cell because this is damaged or it needs to be replaced, and you actually get new cells. As you age, stem cells go down. The more stress you have, the more sugar you eat, or the more frequently you eat, the more it goes down. So when you do prolonged fasting, you actually enhance your stem cell reserve, your pool of stem cells. And this is another reason why you would get younger and you would feel more youthful, because you have more replacement. So prolonged fasting is a really amazing repair action. The drugs that promote anti-inflammatory effects basically dominate the market. Most of the money in drugs have to do with anti-inflammatories. Interesting. Rheumatoid arthritis, autoimmune diseases, just pain and inflammation. This tool of prolonged fasting is essential to actually help someone get to the root of why they're stuck in inflammation. A diabetic has a lot of inflammation. So if you have arthritis, bursitis, rheumatoid, any of the itises at all, you need to do prolonged fasting. All of the autoimmune diseases involve inflammation. That's why the remedy for autoimmune, whether it's MS, rheumatoid, always involves taking steroids, okay, like cortisone shots or prednisone. And that's an anti-inflammatory. But the problem is it rebounds and it creates more inflammation and destroys the adrenal gland. So this is a very safe way of reducing your inflammation. And if you have an autoimmune condition, this is essential. You can greatly improve that condition because of the effect on prolonged fasting on the immune system. Number 6, decrease tumor growth. So whether you have a polyp, a cyst, a boil, a fibroid, you need to do prolonged fasting to improve that situation. When you get into fasting, you run your body in ketones, and tumors cannot survive with ketones. Cancer lives on sugar. And when we do fasting, we deplete the sugar reserves, your glycogen reserves, and we're running on ketones, okay, and fatty acids. Well, tumors can't live on that, okay? So we starve them off. And also, cancer lives on glucose and L-glutamate. So by doing prolonged fasting, you get to starve cancer as well. So that's another benefit that I didn't mention. Number 7, increase antioxidants. Your body has an antioxidant network, Okay, so you have vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc can act as an antioxidant, glutathione, lipoic acid. There's a whole bunch of them. So when you go into fasting, your antioxidant levels go way up. Why? Because this is where the body repairs and it defends itself against microbes and things like that. But zinc actually goes up when you do prolonged fasting. And zinc is involved in a lot of enzymes that are antioxidant. Uric acid also goes up. Now, you might think that's a bad thing, but uric acid is one of the most powerful antioxidants in the body that your body uses when it's fasting. So it goes up, but then it will come back down too. So it's not a long-term thing. It's just a thing that will spike up just because the body needs that to clean up some of the stuff that it's dealing with. Okay, number eight, cell resistance to stress. So there's been this idea that when you do prolonged fasting, it's very stressful to the adrenals. Well, actually, it's helpful to the adrenals because it increases your stress tolerance. You're no longer running on the ups and downs of sugar. You're basically going into this interesting repair mode where the body starts to increase the resistance to all sorts of stresses. And part of that is the antioxidant level, but part of it's just like if you were on chemo, for example, and doing fasting, your body, your cells would survive better because of this fact right here. So the cells become tougher. Okay, it's just kind of the survival mechanism that's established from genetically because of years of adaptation in the past. Or when our bodies don't eat, it has to survive, so it goes into that certain mode. Now, how do you do prolonged fasting?
All right, so we'll take a break there. How do you do prolonged fasting? So, see, I'm 48 hours in now, so I'm doing all these great things are happening inside my body right now. So this bolsters my commitment to doing it. It is, it's helpful to have the encouragement, and it's all over the place. You can go out and find it anywhere. So when we come back, we'll talk about how you actually do prolonged fasting. Again, I know I've been talking about this for several weeks. That is because January is the time, the beginning of the year is when I decide to clean up. I'll leave this topic kind of behind in weeks going forward, but I rest assured it'll be back next December and January as a topic. There's so many success stories of people who have cured themselves of autoimmune issues, all kinds of diseases, chronic inflammation, pain. You can find these stories all over the place and in research and studies, all kinds of things. And so I believe it's actually a very important topic. And once you realize that you can live without food, you stop being a slave to every hunger pang you have. There is something to listening to your body. But every time you just get I want a piece of something sweet to eat, that's just a craving. That's not a desire for your body dying for more of this or that. It may be wanting more sugar because you've had a sugar crash. But when you realize that you do not have to eat constantly to keep going, to keep running, it's liberating from a whole lot of different stuff. We'll be right back.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for today. We're talking about fasting here. We're going to listen to the rest of this presentation on how you do prolonged fasting from Dr. Eric Berg. A few things I'll tell you about it. You know, it's probably a little different every year. This year I'm actually doing a few rocks of sea salt, Himalayan pink Himalayan sea salt. You get a lot of good minerals and stuff in that. I've tried to add that this year. I just suck on a few rocks every now and then. I love salt anyway. Anybody who goes out to eat with me probably thinks I have a problem with salt. But I like salt, and so I'll do that to get minerals while I'm fasting. It doesn't break the fast. I did a research on it. I'm also drinking black coffee. It does not break the fast, and there's some evidence that caffeine may help. And I've got a lot going on. You know, when I do these fasts, I'm fully functional. I do try to get more rest. Yesterday, I actually took a nap. I'll tell you right now, I took about an hour-long nap just because I kind of felt like I wanted to, and I had the time to do it, which is rare. But I've got a full day today. I was up early this morning. I'll do the show, I'm going to go down to the rally, and then I'm going to go do some more work until about 10:30 tonight. And from previous experience, I won't miss a beat. But you do need to kind of plan these things, make sure you're not doing it on times where you got office parties or things like that. That's when I tried to tuck it in. Another word about fasting, don't think that you can eat a bunch of garbage and then fast for a few days and then start eating a bunch of garbage again and do your body a whole lot of good. It's probably better than not doing it, but you're going to feel terrible. You're going to feel terrible during your fast if all you did was eat garbage and then suddenly stop eating garbage. And then you're going to feel terrible when you start eating garbage again. I mean, to me, this is always kind of a reminder that, hey, I've just put this work into a fast. I've reset my system. And now I need to dial in better on my nutrition. So we're going to let one other thing I did want to mention. This is not for children, not for growing children. It kind of bummed me out. I've taken my children on a lot of health journeys with me, but I've not been able to bring them along for a fast because they've been too young. They are now 20 and just about to the age where they are fully developed. They're not going to grow anymore, but a growing body needs a lot of nutrition, and fasting, I don't believe, is recommended for any children unless there's some kind of a serious condition that they have that where they might benefit. So this is not for the kiddos. Back to Dr. Eric Berg.
Now, how do you do prolonged fasting? I would recommend that you let your body tell you how long to fast, especially initially. You want to let your body kind of get used to it. So let's say, for example, the first time you try it, you only go 24 hours and you have to eat. That's fine. Well, give it more time. Maybe next month, start again. And maybe go to 36 hours, okay? And then work to 48 hours. Let your body tell you when you need to eat, okay? And I'm not talking about just some small amount of hunger. I'm talking about like, oh my gosh, I feel weak, my blood sugars are crashed, I'm hungry. Well, of course, you're ready to eat, okay? Just eat. But what you'll find when you do fasting is your hunger goes away and you feel good mentally and in your digestive system. So if you're feeling great, ride the wave and keep going. The only time I wouldn't recommend fasting in general, intermittent fasting or prolonged fasting, is if you're pregnant, okay, or you're breastfeeding. Healthy keto is fine, but not intermittent fasting. And the other situation that I wouldn't recommend prolonged fasting would be if you're very, very thin and you're trying to gain weight, because you're going to lose some weight on this. So that might be an issue. You can do intermittent fasting, maybe two meals a day, but when you start going more, you're going to lose a lot of weight. So that's just one point about that. But go gradually and let your body tell you how long to go. So many people do this. They just like, they start fasting and they feel great. So they just keep going as long as they can. They might get up to 72 hours and then they're ready to eat. Okay. So over time, you can do it longer and longer and longer, but you don't want to force yourself. What you're living off is your reserve of nutrients. So I do recommend taking a multivitamin mineral. Okay. I do recommend electrolytes and sea salt. I've had people actually pass out by trying to do this too fast because they weren't taking enough sea salt or electrolytes, and the body needed that. So, you know, make sure that you don't omit this. When you actually get done with your fast, you don't want to do this huge meal. You want to go slowly. You want to refeed slowly because it's kind of a shock to the system eating too much. Okay, so go just eat a little bit, wait a little bit, eat a little bit more, gradually ease into it. A really good thing to do when you're fasting is green tea. Naturally decaffeinated would be good. That will really help increase your antioxidant level. And another tea that's great for prolonged fasting would be Hoodia gardenia, and that will help suppress appetite, so it just makes it even easier. There's a product called EDTA. You can find it online. This is a chelator. I like this product because it pulls out heavy metals, specifically iron and calcium, especially if you have a lot of calcium deposits and stiffness or kidney stones, and a lot of other minerals. But if your iron is too high, you can have a lot of problems with the body. So this is a good chelator to pull the excess free iron out of the body. So if you took this, let's say you took it twice a week and you just took it in the morning, and then the afternoon you took your electrolytes, that would be awesome because this does pull out other minerals too. So we want to put the ones back in that we want. But EDTA, I recommend it to take excess calcium out of your body and excess iron out of the mitochondria, which you're going to find that's going to enhance your energy even more. It's great for circulation. It's good for cardiovascular function and also mitochondrial function. So it's just an extra thing that is very beneficial to take, but you just need to take it like twice a week. You don't have to take it on a regular basis just because you could pull out too many minerals. So there you have it, the 8 benefits of prolonged fasting in a nutshell. Thanks for watching.
So he's just got such great material out there on YouTube. It's a shame that more people do not use the internet to avail themselves of this kind of information. Again, you know, I'm not sure how long I'll go with this fast. I'm 48 hours in now. I'm sure I'll sail to 72. Usually on the third or fourth day, typically the fourth day, I start to feel a little punky, a little snotty, a little flu stuff. They call it a healing crisis. And then usually once I break through that, I feel good on the fifth day. My goal is a 7-day fast, but I do not think I have the time this time to do it. Who knows? I just go. I'm kind of like Dr. Berg said, if I felt like I was, you know, it just wasn't working, it made me feel a little too funky, then I would just break the fast. But do it slowly. Do not go out and eat a big meal. You will regret that. I've done that as well. I've made a lot of mistakes over 10 years with fasting because you get pretty excited about eating. When you come back into it, I'll spend the last day of my fast just thinking about all the things I'm about to crunch up and eat. Or, man, an avocado never tastes so good as after you've been on a 5 or 6 day fast. You will fall in love with an avocado with a little bit of salt on it. So anyway, I think there's tremendous benefits to it. If you're facing conditions, do your own research and see if it's appropriate for you. But I've seen just tremendous stories of people that kind of reset their system and were able to get rid of some nagging pains or health conditions. So something to throw into your holster and consider. That's all the time I got today. I'll see you tomorrow.
No matter Bye-bye. How hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how